Center now. So my quick bio is that I'm a professor at the University of Connecticut, and I'm based at the UConn Center on Aging, which is on the campus where the medical and dental schools are located at the University of Connecticut. And the title of the talk is How Much Primary Care Do Patients with Dementia Receive? Evidence to Help Inform Patient-Centered Medical Home Development. And I have no relationships to disclose in terms of financial relationships. Okay, acknowledgments. The co-authors of this work include a health economist, Pedro Gonzalo, who's at Brown University, and Karen Pasquale and John Lynch, who are both with the Connecticut Center for Primary Care Incorporated, CCPC. And CCPC is the research arm of the Primary Care Physician Network that I will be talking about this morning. And I gratefully acknowledge the funding source for this work, which is the Ethel Donahue TRIP Center at the University of Connecticut Health Center. And TRIP stands for Translating Research into Policy and Practice. So by way of background, the patient-centered medical home. So in general, what I'll be doing, in contrast to the other presenters, is looking at dementia from the point of view of primary care physicians, really. So think of it that way, from the office-based in the community, primary care physicians. And the patient-centered medical home is a fairly recent development that has been endorsed by all the primary care medical societies in the United States, as well as many other healthcare stakeholders, and also the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And the general principles of PCMH include team-based primary care, shared decision-making with patients involving increased cultural competence, practice redesign, including electronic health records and continuous quality improvement, and a key as far as electronic health records goes is meaningful use. And so the whole idea not just have an electronic health records system in place, but to actually use the data for quality improvement purposes. And then there are several demonstration projects going on right now, particularly with the Medicare patient population, on payment reform possibilities under this PCMH model. And the concept has become very popular. It has really caught the attention of the primary care community throughout the United States. But when we think about dementia care from the primary care physician's point of view, there are really a lot of challenges. First of all, there continues to be considerable diagnostic uncertainty. And that means that there are a lot of primary care physicians who don't always feel comfortable. A lot of them who have been in practice for many decades did not receive training in medical school to conduct the differential diagnosis. And in fact, there's really still a lot of uncertainty about precisely the best way to go about making a differential diagnosis to this day. When it comes to once a diagnosis is made, primary care physicians have been found in many surveys to not commonly refer patients and family caregivers to community-based dementia information and care resources, and they're often, frankly, unaware of what's available in the community. There are surveys that have shown that only about 30% of primary care physicians in a given community know about the existence of the local chapter or the statewide chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, for example. There is evidence of geographic variation in the extent of knowledge about community resources. So when you look at primary care physicians from state to state, you will definitely see variation in their knowledge about community resources, such as the chapter of the Alzheimer's Association or even the local aging network, Area Agencies on Aging. And at this point, there's only modest interest among primary care physicians in using information technology to help them either diagnose or manage dementia, with younger physicians being more likely, not surprisingly, to adopt information technology. But from the point of view of dementia, there are a couple of really central unanswered questions. How can the patient-centered medical home features be best applied to achieve optimal outcomes in patients with Alzheimer's disease and other dementia? And then also, given the role of families, as we've already heard from other presenters this morning, in caring for patients with dementia, how can primary care be redesigned to incorporate family caregivers on the team? Now, I won't be addressing these questions this morning in the research I've done, but the work that we are doing really leads to trying to figure out how to redesign primary care and then think about the costs associated with those redesigns. Just a couple of studies that have been done, that have at least begun. This was pre-PCMH research. studies that have looked in primary care settings to try to improve dementia care. There was a project that was known as a collaborative care project and also a disease management project. These were randomized controlled trials in primary care settings, and they have shown some promising results in terms of beginning to improve patient and family caregiver outcomes. These studies were based at academic medical centers or in locations where Medicare managed care is the primary insurance mechanism in the United States. And they're also very resource intensive. They were based on team care, but the sustainability is unclear for these types of models in community-based primary care settings. And neither of these studies really did focus on kind of your average general internist or your average physician practice group in the community. And so those are the settings where most patients in the United States do receive their care, not academic medical centers. So there's really a need to look in much more detail at the community-based primary care physician to try to understand how to improve dementia care. And there was a project that was recently completed called Guided Care, and this was based in community-based primary care practices. However, the model involved using RNs to work with primary care physicians in small groups, and the RNs really were trained to treat multiple chronic conditions that led to a risk for hospitalization. The limitation of this study is that there were not that many patients with dementia that were enrolled in the project, and so there were not a lot of lessons that came out of the guided care project. And the reason for that is, especially for patients in earlier stages of dementia, they may not be at immediate risk for hospitalization. And so particularly for patients in earlier stages of dementia and their families who are just trying to learn just what this diagnosis really means, that's really where we need to better understand what's going on in primary care. So little is known about how efforts to augment primary care for patients with dementia might affect the costs to Medicare and other insurers. And this is especially true if features such as care coordination, which is one of the things that teams would do in these PCMH models, would be implemented. So an important first step, and this is what we did in this study, is to determine the cost of usual care for dementia patients in primary care settings prior to looking at some of the PCMH-inspired redesign efforts. So therefore, the purpose of this study was to determine PCP-related costs associated with usual care for community-dwelling patients with newly diagnosed dementia. So the aims of this study were to, first of all, identify a well-defined cohort of community-dwelling patients who had evidence of diagnosed dementia based on electronic billing records from primary care practices, and then to estimate patient costs associated with care provided by primary care physicians in all settings where they might have seen patients for 12 months following a dementia diagnosis. And so the way we went about doing this was we worked with four PCP group practices in Connecticut. Again, these are community-based practices. They're not based at an academic medical center. But all of them, because they're part of a larger network, they use a uniform electronic billing system. And we did this, this was a retrospective review that we did, just at the time that they were implementing electronic health records. So we did not have the benefit in this study of using their electronic health records. As we speak, at the end of 2011, all of these practices now do have EHR. And so one of the things we plan to do in the future is to take advantage of the EHR and see if we could get more extensive data on primary care-related activities than we were able to find in the billing system. So what we did was we identified patients with a first-time diagnosis of dementia between January 2007 and June 2008. And so what we did was we focused on ICD-9 codes for either Alzheimer's disease, vascular dementia, other types of irreversible dementia, such as Lewy body dementia, and also a code for mild cognitive impairment, because we learned from primary care physicians and talking with them before we launched the study that they don't always like to use an ICD-9 code for Alzheimer's disease, probably not surprising to a lot of you because of the stigma that's attached to that, and families just don't always want to hear, and patients, that it really is Alzheimer's disease. So there is an ICD-9 code for mild cognitive impairment, and we did include that in our selection criteria. We were interested in community-dwelling elders, like I said, and so there were patients who are seen in nursing homes by physicians in this group practice, but we excluded those patients. If all of the physician encounters that we found during the 12 months after the diagnosis actually occurred in a nursing facility. And what we did was we examined each patient's billing records, those patients who were extracted from our selection criteria, for 12 months following the first date on a claim where one of these dementia ICD-9 codes appeared. And this is really the best way we were able to figure out to simulate care from 1 year past the official diagnosis of some type of dementia using electronic billing records. And so we used the current procedural technology codes, or CPT codes, which really talk about the setting of care and so where the physician saw the patient. We grouped those into care settings so that we were really able to look at costs associated with ambulatory care or office visits. Also, when physicians were responsible for either authorizing home care, such as a Medicare home health plan, or in cases where were APRNs, which are advanced practice nurse practitioners, working with physicians who actually made home visits. That was the case in one of the four practice sites that we included. We used that information as well to help us estimate costs. When physicians see patients who are in hospitals, that's a separate bill submitted by the physician, and that would be a PCP-related cost associated with the patient being in the hospital. And as I already mentioned, if one of the physicians visited a patient in the nursing facility, because patients, as you will see, did go into nursing facilities at least for a portion of the year after diagnosis, we included that as well. And then we also included CPT codes for diagnostic and therapeutic procedures, such as imaging procedures. So what this yielded was a study cohort of 113 patients across all of the four PCP practices, and here you can see what their demographic distribution is. Not surprisingly, the mean age was 82 years, and you can see the age range. Unfortunately, we could not get race or ethnicity data because those are not routinely kept in electronic billing systems. What we do know, though, from knowing about the group practices is that the vast majority of patients are Caucasian in these geographic areas of Connecticut, but probably about 10 to 20% were African American. There's one practice that is in a geographic area that has quite a considerable African American population. 90% of these 113 patients were covered by traditional Medicare insurance. It turns out that in Connecticut, Medicare Advantage plans have not really permeated the market as they have elsewhere in the country, such as in California. So only 7% of these patients had Medicare Advantage plans, and the remaining 3%, because they were under the age of 65 and not disabled, had commercial health insurance. So based on the accrual rate, we estimated that an average of 19 to 20 patients with newly diagnosed dementia were identified in each of these practices per year. So even though it is a devastating disease from the point of view of the patient or the family, from the point of view of a primary care practice, if they have 20 new diagnoses each year, it's really a challenge to figure out how many extra resources might we want to devote to the care for those. So it's kind of a paradox because this is incidence, this is not prevalence, by the way. So these are 19 to 20 new patients each year with diagnoses. And each of these practices, I failed to mention, have about four, on average of four physicians in them. So what we found was that the most common diagnoses found in any of the four diagnosis fields on the claims that we looked at was that Alzheimer's disease was the most common dementia diagnostic code in 50% of the patients, followed by what was coded as uncomplicated senile dementia, which is becoming a rarer term used certainly by researchers in the area, but it's still used in primary care practices, as you can see. And then finally, uncomplicated vascular dementia was by 13%, and then a smaller number had other diagnoses. The most frequent comorbidity codes were cardiovascular comorbidities, uncomplicated hypertension, atrial fibrillation, and uncomplicated hyperlipidemia. And some of the patients, as you might expect, had many more comorbidities, but many of the patients had no comorbidities in addition to the dementia. So you have quite a wide range of comorbidities in primary care patients with dementia, with newly diagnosed dementia. And this is what we found in terms of patterns of health service use during that first post-diagnosis year. We found that patients made an average of just about 5 PCP office visits per patient, and that is very similar to what you would find in the population of primary care patients in the United States based on the National Ambulatory Medical Care Survey, for example. So these patients were not making an inordinately greater number at all, really, of PCP office visits. But we were able, by just using the billing data from the primary care physician's office, to reveal that more than a third received Medicare home health care during the course of that year. Almost a quarter saw their primary care physician while in a nursing facility. We could not distinguish between short versus long-term stay based on the data that were available, but we do know that most of these patients were only in the nursing home for a short period of time. Some entered a few months after that initial diagnosis and did not return to the community, but others went in for a couple of months, and then there was evidence that they were back home again and saw a physician in the office again. 20% of these patients were hospitalized during the course of the year, and 20% received a home visit from the PCP-affiliated nurse practitioner. And then 70% had laboratory tests ordered by PCPs. Many of those laboratory tests were associated with dementia, but quite a few were not. And in terms of billed charges, we found that total charges for patients were just over $1,800 per patient per year, but with quite a large standard deviation, which is not surprising. So the least expensive patient only generated about $100, and the most expensive almost $10,000. So, you know, quite a range. And with the electronic billing data, we can only go so far to really uncover why that variation exists. But we do know that most charges were billed to the Medicare Part B because 90% of patients had traditional Medicare. So this really represents a baseline for us, again, under conditions of usual care. And so this is really a starting point for us in working with these primary care physicians to figure out how they might redesign their practices. And as you'll see in just a minute, they are very interested in doing that. So in conclusion, using electronic billing records, we were able to determine billed charges by PCPs over a one-year period under usual care conditions for patients after they received a diagnosis of dementia. We found that patients generated PCP charges in numerous care settings beyond ambulatory care, and this will allow us to estimate Medicare Part A costs, for example, related to hospitalizations, as well as for short Medicare costs for short-term nurse, skilled nursing facility care, and possibly Medicaid charges, although during the course of a 12-month period, it's unlikely that there was much Medicaid use. And we know that there was not much Medicaid insurance in this particular patient population. So again, these results provide baseline cost estimates against which PCMH-inspired initiatives can be compared. So as far as next steps, and this is really what we're involved with now, it turns out that this primary care physician network recently received the highest level of designation of patient-centered medical homes. And so they really have gone a far way in the last few years in developing electronic health records, in beginning to use advanced practice nurse practitioners for providing team care for patients across the board. And the PCP network includes pediatricians as well as internists and family physicians. And so they have achieved that designation. It does, that doesn't result in extra reimbursement, but it does show that they are really moving along the path of having all those features of PCMHs. At the present time, our research team is working with not all four of these practices, but with two of the four practices, as well as some additional ones, to test nurse practitioner-guided intervention, which we're calling proactive memory care. And so the nurse practitioner is actually splitting her time amongst three different primary care physician group practices, implementing dementia-specific protocols for patients soon after they're diagnosed, as well as working with their family caregivers. And we're keeping a close tab on costs related to using that nurse practitioner. And so having the usual care data will really be helpful as we then begin to cost out and this is a 12-month intervention, by the way, using this nurse practitioner. And so costs associated with proactive memory care and following similar patterns of PCP billed charges over 1 year will allow us to compare this particular effort to expand primary care for patients with dementia with the usual care costs that were found in the study reported today. And that's it. Thanks very much.